Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
The significance of my standing before you today is certainly not lost on me. I will, as I have always, accept the responsibility to be a role model for others.
That is the newly sworn-in mayor of Tampa, Florida, Jane Castor. She's the city's former chief of police and the first openly gay woman to lead a major city, not just in Florida, but across the Southeast. National Democrats are calling her victory historic, and as you heard, Castor herself acknowledges her responsibility as a role model. But how often did voters bring that up on the campaign trail? Truth is, almost never. Tampa's thinking about immigration, climate change, crime, amongst other things. So what is Mayor Castor's vision for her city? And what is her message for Washington? This hour on Point, a conversation with Tampa, Florida's new mayor, Jane Castor. And you can join us. What is your question for the new mayor of Tampa? And Floridians, what do you want Mayor Castor to get done in her first year in office? Do you have a story of breaking political ceilings? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining us today, of course, from Tampa, Florida, is Mayor Jane Castor. Mayor Castor, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you very much, Meghna. I'm a huge On Point and NPR fan, so thank you very much.
Well, it's a delight to have you. Now, I want to give a big hat tip to the Tampa Bay Times, because I think they've done a really good job reporting on your campaign.
They've done a great job.
And the significance of your victory here. So let me just read a little bit from one of the articles just after Election Day. In Tampa here. This article said, this was back in April, that a race hardly on the radar of most Americans before Tuesday was national news by Wednesday morning as outlets across the country touted her, your groundbreaking election. CNN and the Huffington Post featured her. She was a Twitter moment. Seemingly overnight, Castor, 59, has an enviable political profile. Winner in a landslide, former police chief, mother of two, and popular well-known figure in the third largest city in a crucial swing state. Now, Mayor Castor, you know that journalism loves the narrative that writes itself. But do you see yourself as having become an overnight national political star?
No, overnight success, 31 years in the making, I suppose. No.
So what's your response then to getting calls from Cory Booker and Pete Buttigieg?
Right. And it was, I don't want to diminish the significance of that. And I was very, very appreciative of all of those calls, of congratulatory calls, and then also calls of, you know, any assistance that they could provide. But, I have focused on our city, being the mayor of Tampa and addressing the problems that are significant to our citizens. So it's I don't see all of the confetti and balloons the way some others see it.
Now, I will talk with you in detail about Tampa itself for much of the show. But I have to spend a little bit more time on this, Mayor Castor, because right after your election, we had a conversation about the Democratic 2020 presidential field. And a caller and one of our guests, they were saying, you know, you got to look to what happened in Tampa as revolutionary and what Democrats could accomplish in 2020. Do you not see your victory as indicative of any sort of national potential with the Democratic Party?
Well, I would say that I hope it would be, because here in Tampa, we just focused on the issues that were important to the citizens, and we ran a very, very positive campaign focusing on those issues alone. And so that, that could be a lesson for nationwide candidates as well.
Mm. Now, I definitely respect and know that mayors are very much focused on what's happening on the ground in their cities. But a couple more questions about this, because, I'm seeing here that, you know, you did get calls from Cory Booker and from Pete Buttigieg to congratulate you. But also, let's not gloss over the fact that Florida is a key state in presidential races here. So are they already sort of courting you as a potential ally in their campaigns?
No, I haven't had that yet, okay. But
I'm sure that
has to come right. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that that's coming down the road. You know, we're about a week into this, so I'm sure the issue will come up and it will be addressed. But again, just my main focus is always going to be on our city.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more though about the fact that you are the first openly gay woman to lead a major city, not just in Florida, but in the American Southeast in general. Is that a meaningful accomplishment for you? And I mean, you talked about it in your inaugural speech that you take seriously this responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And I have all along. So, you know, there are just a couple of firsts for me, being the first female chief of police in our department. And when I was sworn in, I said that at the end of my tenure, I didn't want to be remembered as the first female chief. I wanted to be remembered as a good chief. But with that said, the significance of being the first was not lost on me. You know, if there was an individual, a male in that position that failed, they would say, as an individual, he couldn't do it. If I failed, they would say, I told you a woman couldn't do it. And so it's very significant, not only being, you know, the first woman to lead the police department, the first LGBTQ person to be elected mayor. The significance of that is not lost on me, but it's not the main focus of the position. And that, to me, speaks volumes about our city, that never came up.
Well, yeah, so I was just going to say that isn't that in and of itself a sign of great progress? In years before, or generations before, it would have been the main issue.
That's true. And then another point of significance, too, is the margin by which I won this election. To me, clearly that delivered a victory. But what it said is that Tampa is a positive city. And that, you know, they weren't buying that negative campaigning that was coming from my opponent. Mm-hmm. And so that I think that's something that the rest of the country may want to take a look at as well.
Your margin was you won 73% of the vote.
Yes. Close to 74, but who's counting?
You are, apparently.
Right.
Look, just to be a, you know, put my cynical journalist hat on, which I constantly wear, just so you should know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's okay.
It's not unusual at all for Tampa to elect a Democratic mayor. Most of the mayors in the past 50 years in Tampa have been Democratic. So,
without a doubt, yes. Uh-huh, it is. It is a Democratic town here in Tampa. But, you know, 73%, then clearly that my message resounded with all political affiliations. So it was very positive, and said that everyone's not necessarily focused on the political party so much as who can positively affect their lives and address the issues that are important to them.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get to those issues, I promise. But there are unique, maybe not unique, but in very interesting aspects of your life and career, which I think I'd love to explore more. Like, for example, you're a Democrat now, but what, in 2014, 2015, you were not?
Yes. Right. Once I didn't want to change my affiliation until I retired from the police department because I didn't want that to be, public. But really, the Republican Party lost me with the Tea Party. So and I'm a fiscal conservative, but certainly a very liberal on the social issues.
OK. So prior to that point, were you a lifelong Republican?
Yes.
In Tampa?
Yes. We exist down here.
But what specifically about the Tea Party was it that, changing affiliation, in this day and age is a pretty significant public act.
Mm-hmm. It was just the move so far to the right. And, it was just things that I had voted for the individual throughout my life, and both Democrat and Republican. And, it was just more and more Democrat as I went through the years. So it was really it was just that, you know, that swing to the far right with the Republican Party.
Mm. And so then as you look at the Republican Party today in 2019, what's your assessment of it?
Way too far to the right, you know, way too conservative on some issues that, you know, even in if you look at the state of Florida, you know, our legislature is Republican dominated. And some of the issues that the community feels very strongly, the voters feel very strongly, overwhelmingly about, and there's just no action on those issues. And so, those are things that I believe probably on both sides that the parties could take a look at. You know, remembering who put you there in that office. It's the voters, and you're there to serve those voters.
So then tell me more about how you're looking at the National Democratic Party, because you said earlier you're a lifelong fiscal conservative. Is the National Party moving in a direction you'd like to see or not?
Well, I just, I don't want to comment too much on the National Party, but, it just seems that in the Democratic Party that there needs to be more organization and clear focus on issues.
So you're saying that there's not?
Well, that's going to get come back on me, isn't it? But I just think that there's room for more of that. Yes.
Welcome to politics, Mayor Kastner.
I know. Isn't that the truth?
Okay. So, right. So we've got a minute before we have to take our first break here. What is your first priority as mayor in Tampa for your first year in the mayor's
office? Right. The first priority, as I have said many times, is about 100 things. There are a number of issues that I intend to focus on right out of the gate. But the most significant, if I had to pick one, is going to be transportation. We are, as I often say, we're so far behind. We think we're first down here in the in Florida, but in the Tampa Bay area as well. And so we just had a citizen-led referendum on transportation, all for transportation, and passed a penny tax. We really haven't lacked for good ideas in transportation. What we've lacked is the funding for that. And so now that we're going to have some much needed funding, we'll be able to focus not only on the maintenance, paving of roads, sidewalk plans, but on some mass transit as well. So that's very exciting.
Well, we're talking this hour with Mayor Jane Kastner. She's the newly sworn in mayor of Tampa, Florida, and whether she likes it or not, she's getting a lot of national attention as well. So Floridians, what's your question for Mayor Kastner? And for folks outside of Florida, also same thing for you. What's your question for the newly elected mayor of a major Florida city? How do you want her to help you understand Florida better? This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Mayor Jane Kastner. She is the newly sworn in mayor of Tampa, Florida. She won the election there last month with 73% of the vote and got a lot of national attention for it because she is the former chief of police for the city of Tampa, also the first openly gay woman to lead a major city in Florida and across the Southeast as well. Mayor Kastner, let me just ask you, for folks who don't know Tampa well, it's kind of easy. It's one of those Florida cities that's really easy to just slap some labels on, right? Theme parks and water. So tell us about, mm-hmm. What is Tampa today?
Well, Tampa is the greatest city in the nation, without a doubt. You know, we have what I often say is we have all of the amenities in a big city with a small town feel. And we have just is booming right now, growing. The development that is going on here is incredible. We have all of the, well, the majority of the major sporting events here, sporting teams. We host a number of significant events here in Tampa. And as you said, we're surrounded by water. We have 365 days of great weather, and it is just a wonderful, wonderful city to live in. Very, very close-knit, very diverse city that celebrates our diversity. And a wonderful place to live, work, and play.
I'm looking at this at some census numbers for Tampa. 65% white, 24% African-American. Looks like Hispanic or Latino, 25% or so. Those numbers actually don't fully add up, so I'm not quite sure what's going on there. But so I take your point about diversity. I've also, by the way, never heard a mayor ever in my career say anything but their city is the greatest city in America.
Right.
So let's be honest.
But in our case, it's true. So.
But you talked about traffic, though. I mean, honestly, what are some of the challenges that Tampa's facing right now?
Yes, we do have. We just don't have the mass transit solutions. And we have some what we would call quick fix, which is a relative term in transportation, I am finding. But we have railroad lines that aren't in use that we could activate by virtue of this offer transportation funding. We, in essence, have the opportunity to reinvent our bus system and provide reliable service throughout the county. And then you know, looking at our waterways, we have ignored the waterways as a form of transportation, and we're getting started on that with ferry service and some other things down here. So there are a number of issues that we're also exploring, bus rapid transit. So connecting all of our neighborhoods, which in turn allows people to be connected to jobs and so forth. So transportation is a big issue here.
Yeah, I'm telling you, these are issues that sound very familiar. People living in almost any other major American city would say, yes, we're suffering the same things here too. So do you look, like, are there other mayors in other cities that you've been looking to for, you know, partnership, advice?
Yes. Yes, without a doubt. You know, looking at the best practices, you know, as the police chief, I would often say my best original ideas come from other people. Looking at those best practices that work in other cities and bring those and form them into our needs and solutions for our citizens here in Tampa.
Okay. Well, let's take a call here. Let's go to Cameron, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. Cameron, you're on the air with Mayor Caster.
Hi, Magna. Hi, Mayor Caster. Thanks for taking my call. My question for Mayor Caster is, first of all, full disclosure, I didn't vote for you in the initial election, but I did vote for you in the runoff, and congratulations on your election.
Thank you, Cameron.
My question for you is, what are you planning to do to allay the concerns of citizens, frankly, such as myself, that felt that you maintained, at least mentally anyway, too close of ties to the Tampa Police Department, and, you know, ensuring us that you'll be able to act fully as an executive rather than kind of a de facto chief of police?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, clearly spending 31 years in the police department, there are going to be individuals that think that, you know, that it'll be impossible to make that transition, which is just not the case. One of the things when I was first appointed as the chief of police, I told the mayor that I would be the chief of police. And if she didn't like the job that I did, then she would find another chief of police. And that is the way that I will treat the police department as well. You know, I have enough to do, and the police chief will be running the police department. I will not have, you know, any input into how that is running. And if I don't like the way that the job that is being done, then we'll look for another police chief. But we have an outstanding police force. We have an excellent police chief, and I have so many other issues that I have to focus on that that will not be one of them.
But Mayor Castor, if I may, I think what Cameron was getting at is the question of, you know, you spent three decades of your
right.
life, your career in law enforcement
right.
in Tampa. Mm-hmm. So you know the traditions, the cultures, the people, how the department operates at every level. There's a profound familiarity and even sympathy there. And I think he's right to ask, mm-hmm. how are you going to prove that in times of crisis, which inevitably will come, that as mayor, you're not going to be behaving in a way that puts the interests of the department first over the people that the department is charged to protect.
Right. And I understand that fully. And clearly not the first time that this issue has arisen. And you can't erase 31 years of you know, experience in an organization. But if Cameron and others would look at my track record as a chief of police, I was a very tough chief of police, and individuals that did not belong in the department were terminated in short order. And I think that that history bodes very well. And having that experience now as the mayor will assist me in seeing through anything that the police department may be, you know, trying to act inappropriately in situations. But I hear exactly what you're saying. And I think that my experience as the police chief and what the citizens have been able to see, the transparency, the communication, the level of communication that I had as a chief of police, I believe is one of the reasons that they elected me into this position. Mm. And that will continue. And you know, trust me, the police department is doing a very, very good job, but there will be no slack given in that particular area.
Well, one of the things that was headline grabbing about your career in the Tampa Police Department was that during your time there, at least over a certain period of time, there's this claim mm-hmm. that crime was reduced in Tampa by 70%. That seems
Correct.
To be an astonishing number. So justify that. Mm-hmm.
70% it really how? It really is an astonishing number. But that goes back to 2002. And at the time, unfortunately, we were a city for our size with one of the highest crime rates in the nation. By UCR standards, which is the FBI crime stat. And so we had a mayor who came in that understood that in order to realize their goals, Tampa had to be seen as a safe city, you know, where developers, businesses, and families wanted to move. And so in essence, we reinvented the police department. And I could, you know, talk for days on that. But really, the two key elements of that were being very proactive, and that means addressing crime before it turned into patterns. And then also, most significantly, was having a very, very close relationship with our community. I would tell each group of citizens that I talked to, we had close to 350,000 citizens in Tampa. We only had 1,000 police officers, so they would keep crime out of their area with our help, not the other way around. And they responded beyond our wildest expectations. And so through that partnership, we've been able to successfully reduce crime. And we had a number of initiatives that we put in practice. Some were wildly successful. Others weren't. One was our auto theft. By focusing on auto theft, we led the nation 1 year in that category. And we've reduced auto theft by over 90%. In our city, and that is a very accurately reported crime. You know, if somebody's car is stolen, they usually call the cops.
Is this an accounting change? Is that how the number is so dramatic, or did the actual number of auto thefts drop by 90%?
No, the actual number of auto thefts dropped by 90%.
How did you do that?
Well, actually, that was a focus on juveniles. In any city, juveniles are the usual auto theft culprits. And so we put a number of initiatives. The most successful initiative was those juveniles who were the most prolific auto thieves. We would have officers, one of the stipulations that they had was that they would have a probation would be imposed, a curfew would be imposed by the court system. And so the juvenile probation officers were overwhelmed and they only work till 5 in the afternoon. So 10 o'clock curfew, you can figure that one out. We would have officers go by the juveniles' homes to make sure they were there, to meet with the families, see if they needed any services that we could provide, you know, where the breakdowns were in the family services. And that, if I had to pick one issue that allowed us to reduce auto theft so dramatically, that would be it, those home visits to the kids in the neighborhoods.
Okay, so explain this to me a little bit more. And I'm spending some time here on it because it was something of a point of contention in the election, and also because the numbers are so dramatic here. Wasn't there the criticism that this overall 70% drop in crime here was, you know, creative accounting, or did the FBI change the way that it analyzes the crime statistics coming out of cities? Is there any credence to that whatsoever?
No, there's zero credence to that. And even if there was a complaint about the problem is that is such a muddy, when you go from state statutes to the Uniform Crime Report, each state has specific statutes that don't necessarily apply to other states. So the FBI has categories that they call Uniform Crime Reports. And so the numbers don't necessarily translate. For example, in Florida, we have attempted homicide. That's not the case. You either have with UCR, you either have murder or you have aggravated assault. That's it. And so there are changes when they go from state statute to UCR. So that was raised to try to muddy the waters. But ours, we have been audited inside, outside. And since 2002 to current date, there have been no reporting issues with our crime data.
Mayor Caster, one more thing I want to ask you about your tenure in the Tampa Police Department here, because as you know, it was in 2016, I believe, that the Department of Justice, the Federal Department of Justice, released a review of the Tampa Police because there was an accusation that the Tampa Police was unfairly stopping Black bicyclists in an attempt to increase ticketing of bicyclists. And so here's a little sound. This is Tampa City Council Chairman Frank Reddick talking to ABC Action News in 2015, saying that at that time, Tampa police were unfairly targeting African-American bicyclists.
A lot of these people, their only means of transportation is a bicycle. And when you take that away and you're saying, you stop me and you want me to have a receipt for my bicycle, I ride my bike on weekends. And I don't have a receipt, so don't know where it's at. And I think that's an infringement of those little people's civil rights.
I mean, Mayor Caster, you were chief at the time. Was the Tampa police racially profiling African Americans?
No, not at all. And actually, the Department of Justice, I called to have them come in and do an objective look at our initiative, and that. You know, the findings were that there was no racial profiling. And the background on that, and Council Member Reddick, you know, saying that people were being asked for receipts for bicycles is just not factual. But what actually transpired in that initiative is that the Tampa Bay area, is always in the top three for pedestrian and bicycle deaths. And as Councilman Reddick pointed out, you know, in a lot of neighborhoods, that is the form of transportation. The majority of those fatal accidents occur at night. And so we worked with the Florida Department of Transportation. They provided us free of charge with bike lights, and we actually gave away and installed over 2,000 lights on bicycles. And we do have a statute that requires bicycles to be illuminated at night as a safety precaution. And so we handed out, installed over 2,000 bike lights, talked to the neighborhoods about the initiative, and then passed out warnings, gave out warnings, and then ultimately wrote citations. And those citations were a mistake because they actually caused distrust in the very neighborhoods that we were trying to work to protect. So that was an initiative that was not successful. And I have apologized for that over and over.
And the Department of Justice review that you asked for included some 20 recommendations on how the Tampa police could improve relations with those very communities you're talking about.
Right.
Have those recommendations been implemented?
Yes. Actually, the majority of those had been – some of those were already in place. and the others prior to the final report being released, they had already implemented those.
Okay. Well, Mayor Caster, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us, but since I have to take a break in a couple minutes, I don't want to cut them off. So I'll get to them when we come back from a break. But let me ask you, I mean, after 3 decades in the Tampa Police Department, why did you want to, I mean, you're tired, but why make the switch to politics?
I know. I've been asked that question a lot. But, you know, the truth is I was born and raised in this city, and I will spend my entire life here. And I love this city with all my heart. And it is going to change more in the next 10 years than it has in my entire lifetime. And to be able to be a part of that change and to come back in and serve my city again was just, you know, something, an opportunity that I could not pass up. And clearly, as you stated, I'm not a politician. I mean, to the degree you have to be in a public position like the chief of police. But I'm just excited about being able to work on the issues that are important to our community.
Yeah. Well, when we come back, I'm also going to ask you about the story that you cut off the end of your trigger finger and had to learn how to shoot with your middle finger. So hold on there. We're talking this hour with Mayor Jane Caster. She's the mayor of Tampa, Florida. She won the election in Tampa, Florida last month with 73% of the vote, grabbed a lot of headlines for the many firsts that her ascension to the mayor's office of Tampa represents. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Mayor Jane Caster. She is the mayor of Tampa, Florida. Mayor Caster, I will get to the calls that we already have here, but I teased everyone with this story about what you did to your hand. Well, when did that happen?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That was back in, I think, 2014, 2015. Yeah.
You were working on your boat?
Yes. No, I wasn't working on my boat. Okay. It was the boat lift, and it had a flywheel. And anyway, I did something I shouldn't have done and turned away. Somebody called me, turned away, and just lopped off basically the knuckle of my trigger finger, yeah, which was not good. But I practiced with another firearm, you know, just to get the muscle memory, and then went out within the first week and requalified using my middle finger of my right hand. So, and it was pretty funny because I'm out there it was an indoor range, and of course all the media's there, they're all focusing, and my finger's still bandaged up. And as I shot, I forgot about, you know, as the firearm recoiled and the bullet came out, the empty casing, I forgot about the air pressure that came out of there. So by the time I was finished qualifying, I wanted to just sit down and cry. It was so painful. But I was like, okay, that was good. I'll be out in the car if anybody needs me. But anyway, got right back to work. I wanted to get back in uniform.
Well, Mayor Caster, we do have a bank full of calls here, so let me go to them.
All right.
Jim is calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. I live in the greatest city in the United States.
You're in Tampa. I thought she said Omaha.
So I was going to say he's calling from Boston, but no, Omaha, Nebraska.
Right. Being a former police officer, I was wondering what Mayor Caster thought about gun control.
Well, I think that and that's one of the we touched on earlier about our state legislators is that the majority of Floridians are all for, you know, responsible gun regulation. And yet it's not being passed. I have seen way too many deaths and from firearms, you know, the easy accessibility, kids finding them. And we actually had here in Florida was just passed that we would arm teachers in the mm-hmm. schools, which I think is such a mistake. But, you know, I believe in the Second Amendment. But I also believe in responsible gun ownership. I would not mind registering my firearms and, you know, being a responsible individual. One of the issues with firearm ownership, in my opinion, is that individuals feel by virtue of buying a firearm that all of a sudden they are much safer. And, you know, they don't understand the significance of that. Police officers train on a regular basis. And when it comes down to deadly force situations, they hit the target about 30% of the time. So owning a firearm does not make you safer.
Mm. Well, Becky is calling from Tampa, Florida. Becky, you're on the air with Mayor Castor.
Hi, all. I actually moved away for 15 years. I lived in Atlanta, Dallas, and Minneapolis, and I saw very different infrastructure priorities and mass transit priorities as well, different pollution issues. So my question, I have a couple questions. One is, how do we handle Tampa's pollution issues, including our marine pollution, and then also our infrastructure? We have a lot of new buildings and new properties in the last 30 years. And I've noticed a really huge difference how far Tampa is behind cities like Minneapolis or even Atlanta, and that has an aging system. So I'm wondering about your ideas on how to manage the population influx and concentrations and the pollution. Thanks.
Right. And those are both very good questions. So, you know, from the point of the pollution or from the sea level rise, that is a very real issue for the Tampa Bay area. And I intend to have a resiliency and sustainability officer in my administration. And we will focus on ways that we will be able to address and possibly mitigate the effects of sea level rise. And then on the opposite end of that, what we can do as a community, and that means the city all the way down to individual citizens to reduce our carbon footprint. You know, on the city side, we can look at solar energy, having green fleets, you know, all of the things that we can take steps towards. But that's every citizen's responsibility, in my opinion. And then in the infrastructure, you know, we do have aging infrastructure as far as the piping water, wastewater, as one of the former mayors so eloquently put it. You never see a ribbon cutting for new sewer lines. But we have a $3.1 billion infrastructure resolution that's going to go through here in the near future. And that will be over probably more than a decade project to replace all of our aging water and wastewater pipes. Mm. And then in the infrastructure also, I talked about the money that we're going to be receiving from the All for Transportation that will allow us to repave a lot of our roads. And then looking at the pre-planning, you know, you see these roads torn up and paved. If we have issues with the piping underneath and the road needs to be repaved, let's do all that at one time. So looking at some efficiency and effectiveness techniques as well.
So, Mayor, if I can just follow up with something that Becky was talking about water and resiliency. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is an issue that every city, every coastal city in America, up and down the eastern seaboard, on the Gulf Coast and on the Pacific Coast, in terms of marine water, really has to worry about. And one of the things that they're all grappling with is you can sort of do neighborhood level resiliency projects. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the sea level rise and the big water, I mean, mm-hmm. most of the ideas thus far carry price tags in the billions and billions of dollars. I mean, how is Tampa going to grapple with that?
Right. Well, you know, and that is we're going to have to do as much as we can. And we're going to look at, you know, the codes for construction moving forward, roads, building roads, lifting those up, the things that we can do to, you know, as a region, not just the city of Tampa. City of St. Petersburg is a little ahead of us on these. Actually, they're a lot ahead of us. But we need to address this from a regional aspect as well. But you're right, Meghna. There is a huge price tag on this. But we can't kick that can down the road. We have to start addressing it now.
The same question about transportation and infrastructure.
Yes.
Like, you know, Tampa's going to have to foot some of the bill. The state of Florida would have to foot some of the bill. And the federal government would. There's a lot of disconnect between those three levels in terms of how much and where such funding should go. So how are you going to work your way through that?
Well, and I will work my way through that through not only with the transportation as a specific issue, not only with the all for transportation, but to your point, you know, we're going to have state dollars and federal dollars brought into that. So that will be working. I will be working in conjunction with all of those officials. And I have great contacts on the state level and even on the federal level as well. So, you know, I will work hard to bring those dollars to Tampa so that we can implement some of these solutions.
I mean, the strategic part of me is thinking this is a good lever to use in the 2020 presidential election when you're going to get a stream of high-profile visitors coming
to see you. That's right.
Let's go back to the callers. Marianne is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Marianne, you're on the air.
Hi, and congratulations to all your success, Mayor Castor. I wanted to bring a point up similar to what you had talked about with focusing on juveniles and bringing down auto theft in Tampa. In Dayton, we have a real problem with infant mortality. And infant mortality is a child that dies prior to its first birthday. So our chief in Dayton looked at how to make a difference. And did the police department have any correlation with these families? And they found 75% of these families had some kind of interaction with the police, mostly through traffic violations, 18 months prior to this child's death or the family or the pregnant mom. So what they've done is they've partnered with nurse home visiting programs that actually do education. And when they go into a home, whether it's domestic violence or something along those lines, or there is an altercation, an auto incident or violation parking, anything like that, and they recognize that a mom is either pregnant or a small child, they've been partnering with us to get connected. And again, it goes along with that idea of reaching out and getting connected with the families through the police department and helping those families. So is there an infant mortality problem in Tampa?
Yes, there is. And that's a great idea, though. We do not, to my knowledge, I've been out of the police department for 4 years, but to my knowledge, we don't have that direct correlation. But we do work very closely with the Children's Board here. Children's Board is a Hillsborough County organization, and their focus is on infants. And the mortality is an issue that we have been able to bring down here in our community. But it's, you know, until it gets to zero, then we're not going to be successful. So I will certainly call the director of the Children's Board and talk to the chief of police about that as well.
Well, let's go to Bobby, who's calling from Miami, Florida. Bobby, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, and I just want to say I'm admittedly one of the people waking up from the Stone Age who used to rely on labels a little bit more than I ought to and seeing the sunshine and the best person for the job, and we're all hoping and praying that you're one of those people. That said, you know, the idea here of minimum wage and, you know, or a living wage and the ability for communities to have people that can actually survive in these areas that are many of them being gentrified. That's happening all over Florida, and I'm sure it's happening in Tampa. What is your ideas and your position on this? And, you know, because with being able to live, the crime also goes down and everything else, pregnancy and so on.
Well, Bobby, thank you for your call. Mayor Castor, go ahead.
Yes, and that is an issue, the living wage, you know, trying to get to $15 an hour here in our community. But it's something that is a goal that we will work towards. You know, you have to look at the unintended consequences. And if we were to go immediately to the $15 an hour, then, you know, a number of people would lose their jobs. But one of my – so that is a goal that will be worked towards. One of the platforms of my administration is going to be workforce development and job creation. And one of the things, we have a great deal of development going on here in Tampa. I mean, our city is just on fire, and we don't have the skilled workforce for that. And so that's a win-win public-private partnership there, because the developers are willing to get involved financially, and then we can provide the training as a community. And then you get a good paying job, which will allow you to afford a home and then sustain retail in the neighborhoods. Mm. So we do have a plan for that. The problem is, in this, you know, instant gratification society we live in, it's not going to happen overnight. But all of those pieces of the puzzle will be put in place so that we can start down that road towards a living wage and towards good paying jobs in our community.
One more call here. Let's go to Henry, who's calling from Shreveport, Louisiana. Henry, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, as someone with law enforcement experience, how do you feel about the legalization of recreational marijuana?
You know, it's interesting. I would, when it first came out, people would say, you know, what was your opinion on that? And I would say I was against it, but not for the reasons that you think. In law enforcement, you find that the vast majority of problems that you deal with are anchored in alcohol abuse and or drug abuse. And so now, you know, you're just adding to that. But that's recreational marijuana. I mean, we've decriminalized it here in our city. And, you know, what I want is the education component of that. Matter of fact, we give out civil citations in our high schools, a program that we started to ensure that young kids aren't saddled with an arrest record. And that's one of the misdemeanors that we included was marijuana. But I stipulated that there had to be an educational component with that. So if kids were caught with marijuana, they would have to go through the civil citation program that required education, so they knew the effects and the downside of marijuana use.
Mayor Castor, I will note, though, that in that answer, you lumped together drug problems and alcohol and the decriminalization of marijuana, which is manifestly different than the legalization of marijuana.
You're
learning politics very well. I have to say, I'll give you credit for that. We'll pick up the question about marijuana legalization a bit later, but we've just got a minute and a half left to go for this conversation. We've got one last question that's come in via Twitter. Someone calling themselves Gia's Not There just simply asks, you know, given, again, going back to the beginning of your sort of groundbreaking leadership of Tampa, what are your plans to enshrine protections for the LGBTQ community and other minority communities?
Yes, and that is very significant. And I have received a great deal of support from a number of different organizations: Victory Fund, LPAC, Equality Florida, working with the NAACP, a number of different ACLU as well, a number of different organizations. And those on the human rights front is something that I have always worked very, very hard to ensure that everyone was treated equally. And that is something that will continue here in the city of Tampa.
Well, Jane Castor is the newly sworn in mayor of Tampa, Florida. She won the election there last month with 73%, almost 74%, as she says, of the vote. Mayor Castor, it's been a great pleasure, really great pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Magna.
On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, and Grace Tatter, with help from Matt Hoisch and Sydney Wertheim. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. And before I sign off today, I want listeners to know that we have a special upcoming show for all the college seniors out there listening today. Special request for you. We are doing a show on the senior thesis in a couple of weeks, and we want to hear what you've been working on. Visit our website, onpointradio.org, to fill out a survey and get a chance to be a guest on On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.